Remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is a BC members call taking place on the 22nd of May, 2013. On the call today, we have Zahid Jamil, John Berard, Elisa Cooper, Fred Feldman, Philip Corwin, Ron Andrews, Steve Del Bianco, Angie Graham, and Andy Abrams. We have apologies from Marilyn Cade, Aisha Hassan, Janet O'Callaghan, J. Scott Evans, Amber Leavitt, Gabriela Slack, and Cyril Lerman. I would like to remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Elisa.
Thanks, Benedetta. Well, thank you to everyone for joining today's call. I'd like to cover a few items first, and then I'll sort of run through the agenda, and then I will turn it over to Steve. So actually, Benedetta, if you can advance the slides so we can see the agenda.
Hey, Lisa, this is John. Keep in mind, some of us are on the computer screen. It could be more radio, TV.
Yep. So before I go through the agenda, there are just a few items that I would like to cover, starting off with the election results. As you probably all know by now, there were no nominations, unfortunately, but Chris Chaplow has very, very graciously agreed to stay on for an additional 2 months. And I'm hopeful that after those 2 months, we will be able to find someone that is interested in taking on the role of the Finance and Operations Chair. And I would invite anyone with interest or anyone on this call who knows of another member who might be interested to reach out and ask any questions that you might have about the position, what the requirements are, because we desperately do need to fill that role. And Chris already, I think, has, you know, gone well above what has been asked by agreeing to stay on for these additional months. The second item that I'd like to cover is the fact that there is a call for participation by the GNSO Council for a drafting team to develop a charter for a working group. And so, to be clear, they're looking for people to join a team to draft a charter that will drive a working group that is focused on the issues around policy versus implementation. And my understanding is this whole issue around policy versus implementation is really starting to heat up, and hopefully at the council level. And so, John, when you speak about your activities on the council, it would be great if you're able to kind of cover what some of those issues related to policy versus implementation at the council level are. The third item that I'd like to tell you about is the fact that thanks to Zahid, I was put in touch with Aubrey Doria, who is participating from our house on the ATRT, which is the Accountability Transparency Review Team. And she has offered to provide us with an update on progress and also to solicit our input. And I'm looking to try to schedule a meeting maybe sometime next week so that those people that are interested in this particular topic have an opportunity to hear from Aubrey what is going on and also to share any views with her. And so hopefully she hasn't gotten back to me yet, but I'm hopeful that I'll be able to schedule that for next week. And then finally, the Durban meeting is quickly approaching. We still have a number of meetings scheduled before our meeting in Durban, but I would like to ask the members to start thinking about topics that you would like to discuss at the meeting in Durban. I know for one, I would like for us to spend some time discussing outreach and also the charter amendments, but I'm sure that there are many other areas that members would like to cover as well. So that is actually everything that I would like to cover today. I have left a fair amount of time for any other business. So before I kind of go through the agenda, I guess I'd like to open it up to members and ask if there are any other items or issues that anyone would like to take on during this call.
Elisa, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, because she said it was listed mode only.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, no.
So you can hear me. Okay, yep. I think that was a mistake.
Yep.
I can barely hear you, though.
Okay. I will be sure to speak a little bit louder. So in today's agenda, up next, we'll hear a policy update from Steve, and then a council update. Both John and Zahid are on the call, so definitely interested in hearing what is going on at the council level. It seems as though Marilyn will not be joining us, and I'm not sure if Chris has joined the call.
Joined late. Sorry, Liz.
Oh, no worries at all. Chris will go through an update on the ICANN budget, and then if there are any other items that anyone wants to discuss, we definitely have some time to do that. So with that, over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Alisa. Hey, Chris, you were joined late, so you missed the praise and gratitude of all your peers for serving for an extra few months as Finance and Administration. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Steve. I'll listen to the recording. Thanks.
All right, so Alisa has allocated 20, and 20 minutes isn't enough to do the detailed run-through on the RAA and GAC advice, but it is enough. A high-level review of that, plus three other items that are on sort of the policy calendar I wanted to highlight. The first is that we have public comments coming up for the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. We always abbreviate it as ATRT, for the Affirmation of Commitments, and it's actually the second round. They did it 3 years ago, came up with some very bold recommendations about the role of the GAC and how they interact with the board and how ICANN is accountable. And some of those recommendations were followed and some weren't. And the ATRT team is soliciting answers to questions right now. And the BC has long considered this vital. One of the key questions is, what's the role of the GAC and the GAC advice? You can see how important that is. There's the question of how do they define public interest, which is showing up more and more as a metric for ICANN. We think comment periods ought to be longer. And finally, the notion of policy versus implementation, which is a process issue of transparency. So the BC has vital interests in the ATRT. We don't have anybody that's been nominated to that team. And, again, that's a team set by the board and the GAC. But we'll have an opportunity to do input if we can get our act together by June the 9th. On an earlier call, almost 3 weeks ago, Marilyn had volunteered to take a stab at this, but I don't think she's been able to get to it. Who can I ask on the BC that's interested in helping us just to fashion a very brief comment on the Accountability and Transparency Review Team? We're helping to set the agenda for what that team will look at over the next year. I'll take a cue on that. There are 17 comments filed so far, and ironically, most of them said, we need more time, we need more time. So they did extend it to June the 9th.
Steve, I see Stefan raised his hand.
Go ahead, Stefan.
Yeah, hi. Hi, everyone. I hope you can hear me properly. This is Stefan Van Gelder. Steve, just a question before I either volunteer or don't. Are you looking at notions of more generic notions of the way ICANN selects its volunteers? I noticed your comment, which struck home, on the fact that we don't have representation on the ATRT. Obviously, I'm a new member, so I don't know if we volunteered, if anyone was put forward for that or not from the BC. But certainly, it's something that has caught my attention in recent times, is that ICANN seems to be setting a bar that just gets constantly higher for inclusion in volunteer groups, key volunteer groups such as this one. And I seem to remember a time when it used to be the other way around. You know, ICANN would call for volunteers and be very open to getting as much representation as it can. Now it seems as a process of proactive selection of volunteers, which means ICANN's putting itself in a position to decide who gets to represent what and who gets to speak at these things. So to me, it's not really one voice for everyone. It's not really the same model. I don't know if that's something you want to encompass in your work here. If it is, I'd be much interested in participating.
Thanks, Stefan. I'm going to find a way to take that volunteering of yours and fit it in. But to be honest with you, the composition of this team is dictated by the Affirmation of Commitments. It specifically delineates how many representatives from GNSO, CCNSO, et cetera, and it specifically says how they're approved by the GAC chair and ICANN's board chair and board CEO. So this particular team isn't really one where we can say much about how its members are selected. It's the CSG. We ended up picking somebody to put forth. So I love your general point on how volunteers are general, which we can fit into our comments on this, Stefan.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You've understood exactly where I'm coming from, which is why I was saying that it was a slightly different topic. The ATRT is the worst example of this because of what you've just said, but the trend in general is still there.
All right, then. Thank you. I'll take that as a volunteer, and it may end up being just you, Marilyn, and I on this one. But we need to pick off six or seven topics. It's a very brief comment, and ideally we circulate something to our membership early next week. I'll follow up with you and Marilyn. Anyone else?
Steve, this is Zahid. Steve, can you hear me?
Go ahead, Zahid.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I was having a word with Jeffrey about this, and apparently there's a questionnaire that the ATRT sent out. And apparently the questionnaire, the deadline was sort of, I think it was the 19th or something, but they're still willing to have individual companies or even constituencies sort of fill out the questionnaire and send it to them. And there are specific questions that they have asked, sort of like a survey, a questionnaire. And
right,
I don't know if this is the same thing we're talking about right now.
Okay. It's related. It's related, Zahid, because in addition to the questionnaire, they actually put together a document several pages long. We discussed this in Beijing, where they are inviting input from folks like the BC on topics they should consider as they do their review. And so we don't want to be constrained by the survey, the automated survey they put together, which looks more at what happened since the last review. I think we want to look forward, and that deadline has been officially extended to June the 9th, so we do have time to officially comment on things like the GACS role, public interest, comment period length, policy implementation, and how volunteers are selected. Zahid, would you like to work with Stefan, Marilyn, and I on that?
I'd be happy to. Thank you.
You're the best. All right, moving to the next one. The proposed final RAA. A huge thanks to Anjali Hansen, who undertook her first rapporteur, drafting role for the BC. And this is on the RAA comments. Did a fine job, and Elisa Cooper was also able to weigh in. There's a comment in there provided by Zahid, by Bill Smith, Ron Andruff, and Susan Kawaguchi. That was circulated to all of you on May the 14th. And, of course, this was pursuant to the fact that we had a full conference call in this on the May 2nd. At this point, we are very close to final. I have proposed that we finish this by May the 28th, which is next week. That gives us a full 14 period, so we can get it in before the comment period closes. You have all received comments that Elisa Cooper circulated just the other day. And Elisa, I was anxious to hear what Anjali, who's on the call, is willing to accept the edits that you made, Elisa. Then we would be pretty close to finished right now. I would turn the cue over to Anjali and Elisa for a moment.
Hi, Steve and everybody. Elisa, I just had a... Does everybody have the redline version, I'm assuming, that Elisa circulated?
Yes, they all received it.
Okay, so I'm looking at that right now. And the one question I just had, Elisa, you struck the question that I had raised, which is, registrars currently, the way it's written, they're not required to sign on to any new RAA that may be developed, just as this one was developed to replace the 2009 RAA. If you sign on to this one, then if there's a new one that comes on board, they're not required to sign on to the new one. Rather, they can stay with this current one if they're in good standing. Is that a concern for anyone? Or am I not reading it right?
No, I think you are, but there's a parallel process in that the new RAA does allow ICANN to impose unilateral amendments, not necessarily in a slam-dunk way, but there are ways they can amend the RAA. But I'll defer to Elisa to give an answer on that.
Yeah, so that was actually not my understanding. My understanding was that any changes would have to go through that whole process that's outlined. But if your understanding is that they don't have to, so to answer your question, yes, I do think that's an issue.
So maybe we just need to have them clarify that, because that may be their intent, but there was that one provision in there in the RAA, and I'll have to dig it up, which was not clear on that regard. So I agree that there is a way to amend the RAA, and that goes through the whole vetting process. And
right.
then they are mandatory if they just amend the current RAA. But if they go out and negotiate a new one, that's not clear whether they could do that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I think you're right. If they did a brand new RAA, there would be no way to force everyone to sign it. So I think that we should do is take a few minutes. We won't do it on this call, but if Elisa, you could help with this, and maybe even Stefan, focus on the brand new RAA, and what was called unilateral amendment isn't really unilateral in a strict sense. It has quite a few safeguards in it, but ultimately the board gets to decide. And so in that regard, let's see if that addresses Anjali's point that there is a way that ICANN can amend the new RAA, 2013 RAA, hopefully with bilateral agreement, but failing bilateral agreement, it strikes me that ICANN can ultimately force the registrars who signed this to live by new rules. On that, Elisa, your hand still up?
Yeah, I was just wanted to publicly thank Anjali for taking this on because it was a huge undertaking, and I really, everyone I'm sure really appreciates this, and I myself sincerely appreciate all the work, so thank you so much.
Sure, it forced me to really learn it, so that was good for me, too.
Yeah.
I highly recommend everyone sign on to these projects because you will learn a lot.
Well, thank you.
Anjali and Elisa, did you want to comment any more on this notion of amending the RAA, or we can just move on?
Why don't we work on it, Elisa, and then we could come back with another update?
Yes. There was one thing I did kind of want to mention to members, and there was Bill Smith felt strongly that if the RAA was to be renegotiated, that stakeholders from, you know, across ICANN should be allowed to participate in that negotiation. That wasn't my viewpoint, but I adopted his viewpoint, and so, you know, right now it says that basically everyone should have a seat at the table, even though that wasn't what I felt. But that's what I amended it to be.
I appreciate it. And it has two threads to it, Elisa. It says that any proposed amendments or negotiations would be subject to multi-stakeholder representation and public comment. Now, we know we'll get public comment, but it's great to ask for that. As far as multi-stakeholder representation at negotiations, ICANN's position thus far has been no, but it's probably appropriate, reflecting the majority of the BC members, to suggest that we would request we have representation at negotiation. But thank you for making that concession.
Oh, yeah.
Ron, go ahead. Ron Andrew, if you're in the queue.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks, Anjali, and all who did the good work. I found that document, and I was just looking at it now and talking about it. And, Steve, I just was going to pick up on what you were saying, is that the fact that it's a multi-stakeholder situation in so much as the registrars and registries really are serving the user's interest at the very end, so we should have that public comment and so forth. Multi-stakeholder representation, I think, is very important. So I'm just wondering about the word, you know, we open that paragraph by saying the BC is concerned that the working group will be exclusive and that the BC believes that these things should happen. If we could strengthen that language a little bit, it's more than a concern. You know, a working group that is exclusive to one part of the community and the others just get to look in and watch from the outside, and we're not even sure how that's going to work. That's wrong. So if we could strengthen the fact that, you know, we're more than concerned that the working group, as it's being proposed, is going to be exclusive and not allow stakeholder input, that's one point. And the second one, of course, is then to that in fact it's a multi-stakeholder representation is an absolute. We have to have that in order to maintain the ICANN model. I think those two elements, if we could strengthen those two, then I would very much support all the other work that's gone into this document. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ron. Nelson, RAA. So, again, thanks, Anjali and Elisa. Next topic is the BC's draft comments on the GAC safeguard advice that came out of the Beijing communique. We had three long calls to discuss this draft. I tried my best to piece together what everybody's input was and circulated a draft last Wednesday, the 15th of May. These comments are due by the 4th of June, but we are endeavoring to get our 14-day review period concluded by next week, the 29th of May. There have been several members who have circulated marked-up versions of the comment. We do not have time in this agenda to go through the detail, but as your policy coordinator, I was going to raise where there are significant questions of the BC position and see if there's an opportunity for a very brief discussion. Elisa, let me do a time check with you and Benny. What's the time available on this topic right now?
Well, since Marilyn's not here and we didn't have any other business to cover, I think we have a good 15 additional minutes for you.
Great. I will endeavor to get it done before then. So, Elisa, you, Marilyn, Sarah Deutsch, and Stefan all provided markups to a draft that already included text from several of us that had worked together on this. There have been others who've circulated on the list. With respect to the GAC advice, I would cut it into three chunks. One chunk is what are called safeguards for all new DLDs. The second chunk would be just those with sort of restrictive registration policies associated with, you know, consumer protection and regulated industries. And the third is exclusive or closed generics and whether how the public interest test would be administered for them. So in general, the good news is that on the first topic, we're pretty close at coming up with BC consensus position on the safeguards for all new GTLDs. These were six very specific safeguards about mitigating abuse and doing security checks. And the best the BC can say is that we generally, but not totally, support those six because the BC has noted that some of the safeguards are already handled by registrars who are the ones with the relationship with the registrants. So it isn't really appropriate to impose those same checks and validations on registries as well. The second thing we noted is that accreditation procedures themselves may not be something that ICANN is responsible for, but instead are incorporated by the applicant as part of their public interest commitment specification. So this part of the draft got some surgical edits from Marilyn, and then Marilyn asked this general question on applicable law. So let me clarify something. I propose that we ask ICANN Legal, because again, we're not addressing this document to the GAC, we're addressing it to the board, new GTLD committee, and we've said to them, this was my draft language, you turn around and ask ICANN Legal to put some meat on the bones of what the word applicable laws mean. That doesn't mean to research every applicable law in every applicable country. It's simply to say that for the purposes of implementing GAC safeguard advice, we want ICANN Legal to take a position on whether applicable law is just where the registrant's based, is it where the registry's based, where the registrar was, or where the user is based when they're using a website. The key there is to get a definition on the general contours of applicable law, not the specifics. And it's clear Marilyn misunderstood that one in much of the comments that she put in on page 4. And before I leave that topic, let me take a cue on that to see what the general view is on whether we should ask ICANN to comment on applicable law in the way that I drafted. I see Stefan in the queue.
And Sarah raising her hand.
Go ahead, Stefan. I'm not hearing Stefan. Go ahead to Sarah.
I think in theory it sounds like a good idea, but as someone who's actually researched the issue you're talking about, I don't think I can do much other than perhaps flag various laws people need to know about. The issue of what jurisdiction applies is extremely thorny. So in the U.S., you have to take clear and purposeful steps to avail yourself of the jurisdiction, and there's even a splitting case law on whether having a passive website. You know, in many cases they say that's not sufficient, and others they would say yes if you have customers and arrangements. And then there are countries in Europe who have found that, you know, just having a server in their country is enough to have jurisdiction. So, you know, I don't mind ICANN, of course, doing more work, but I want to make sure what we're asking them to do is realistic. And most corporations today, I mean, in every contract, we're required and our vendors are required to comply with applicable law, and the kind of burden shifts to you to figure out what that is. Although I do think, since we have so many new businesses that are of concern inside ICANN, ICANN could do a duty by fleshing out to them what some of the applicable laws are that they should be researching.
That's helpful, Sarah. I think you're right. To manage expectations, ICANN Legal may not be able to answer this, but I sense that you're supporting my idea that it would be helpful if they could, and it's especially helpful to brand-new registrants, brand-new Internet users, the governments that are just gradually having their populations get on the web. So, again, it's just an ask. It's not the BC taking anything other than a request that ICANN Legal clarify what applicable law means. And I think next in the queue, Stefan, are you back?
Yes, I am. Thanks. Sorry, I was coming off mute. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Good. Nothing much to add to what's been said already. Just wanted to ask an additional point. You mentioned the wording about the fact that the BC generally agrees in the draft. You know, there's that word generally, which I actually wanted to get clarification on. Can we be more specific? What do we mean when we say generally? Do we mean, do we have any way of being more specific? I'm just mindful of the fact that...
All right, let me try to answer that. To me, you have to say something in front of the word supports, because if you simply say the BC supports the six safeguards, one could stop reading there and think that we did, but that is not the position the BC took on our three calls. We had concerns about the terms of service update. We had concerns about registrars already having this responsibility, and therefore registries should not. So I think that we needed to put some qualifier in front of the word supports that encourages the reader to read on and understand that we had a specific questions for further clarification, and we wanted to note that our support is not full and unqualified, but it's more specific than that. And that's why that's the purpose of the rest of the text on page 3. I mean, I'm happy to have an eye for a word other than generally, but the point is to qualify the support and not make it unqualified. Is that all right, Stefan?
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Great. Ron Andruff?
Thank you, Steve. With respect, I think that sending a message to the staff that we're looking for them to define applicable law is a fool's errand. I support what Sarah said. She spent a lifetime fighting these issues and looking at applicable law all over the world. Staff can go off and try to find a solution for us in terms of a definition, but the end result is going to be that you can't apply it to all new TLDs because each one will be so different. So I would push back on asking staff to go off and create a definition. It really is in the hands of the new registries. They have to know which markets they're dealing in, what are those applicable laws in those markets, and work towards them. If you look at any corporation in the world, when they move into a new territory, they don't just move into that territory blind. They do their homework and they know exactly what they have to deal with. So it may be burdensome to the registry in certain circumstances, but for the most part, I don't think that's going to be the case. And that's exactly why I'm saying that burden rests on the shoulders of the registries, not on staff trying to find something, because one size will never fit all. Thank you.
Andrew Mack?
Thanks, Steve. Ron, I'm listening to what you say, and I think some of that makes good sense, but I'm not sure that it disagrees completely with what Steve said. I'm a little bit concerned that for all the reasons that you mentioned, there are going to be a lot of people coming in who are new. There are a lot of questions about applicable law. Even if it's just trying to narrow the field and clarify what questions people should be asking, doesn't that provide something useful to the user community? Doesn't that go some way toward avoiding consumer confusion and things like that? I think it might. And you may be right, it may be a fool's errand. I'm not sure it's an errand we shouldn't ask for anyway. That's my sense.
Move things along. I'd really like to get a raise of hands of those who think it's worth asking versus those who say do not ask. Do not even ask ICANN to clarify. So use the Adobe if you would, please. Give me a hands up if you do think we should ask and a hands down if you think we should not. Take a minute to do that. You can just click in the Adobe. If those of you who are not on Adobe, would you please just signal verbally and give your name? Some of you are putting your hand up as opposed to checking the yes button. I'll take a hand up as a yes. It's 6-4, yeses over noes, from what I can see online now. So that would indicate we will go ahead and ask this question without any ridiculous expectation of whether the board would ask staff to do so or an expectation that staff's answer would be helpful. I do think it's good for the BC to be on record. All right, one other point. Phil Corwin in Maryland.
I'm sorry, Steve. I beg your pardon, Steve. This is Ron. I'm sorry. I had my hand up with all those checks and so forth. If I may just take a minute.
Half a minute, Ron. We've got to move on, please.
Thank you. No, I just, you know, a 6-4 vote on this matter, I think, just put it out to the list. Let the entire list, give them 48 hours to check in. If they ignore it, that's fine, but let's have a broader vote. 6-4 is too close.
That already happened on May 15th, circulated the draft. This was in the draft, and thus far two of you have come back in writing to say you didn't think we should ask, and on the phone two more agreed with you. So it has already been put to the list, but I'm happy to emphasize it in the email we circulate with a new draft, and I'll do that.
And Steve, can I just say one thing quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
I would just say that I don't mind asking the staff to help clarify, give some illustrative examples of applicable laws that people should be concerned about. But again, to define it, it can't be defined. It's that, you know, and you don't want private companies relying on ICANN's, you know, legal department. I don't think they're skilled enough to do it anyway. So every company needs to do it on their own, and it's just a huge endeavor.
Yeah, and I think Marilyn and you agreed totally on this, because she suggested an edit saying that applicable law is an undefined term that may benefit from better understanding and ultimately the responsibilities of stakeholders. So it isn't to define anymore. I think the word define is gone. All right. That there ought to be some safeguards before you suspend domain name due to security. And I noted in the draft that the BC is asking for ICANN to develop standard procedures to suspend domain names due to security check safeguards or safeguard 6 on consequences. I wrote that in, and Marilyn disagreed that we should do that. I wanted to get a quick cue on whether we should have standard procedures for domain name suspension, or leave it up to every registry. I'll take a cue on that. So I can't tell for sure if hands are up from the cue or from the voting, but Angie, your hand is up. Go ahead.
My apologies. I meant to clear that.
Great. Phil Corwin, please.
Yeah, Steve, you know, this issue of domain name suspension or blocking, or basically taking away people's ability to use their domain, was the heart of the PIPA SOPA controversy last year. I think there's got to be, I think a registry just doing it on their own volition without responding to whether it's a court order or a notification from a police agency of ongoing harm or URS, which suspends domains but isn't adjudicative. There's got to be some procedure that the registry is responding to. I think this business of registries deciding on their own and having differing standards for when a domain is suspended and without any defined process for how the registrant can respond to that and restore their ability to engage in business, engage in speech, and all the other things that people, vital activities that people through the domains, is just raises very serious due process issues.
Got it, Ron. And all I put in the draft was the BC recommends that ICANN develop standard procedures for suspension of domain names that would be called for under Safeguard 3 or Safeguard 6. And that was a goal there to ensure that registries that suspended a domain name would act consistently under whatever is determined to be applicable law. So we have one BC member, Marilyn, who didn't like that, but given that no one else has replied, we will keep that in the draft unless there's others who respond. Okay, let's move to the next category. The next category was consumer protection and sensitive strings. It looks like we're very close on that. Ron Andrew provided, I think, some much-needed clarity, and that was helpful on that. and I think we're close. There was one issue I brought up, which was, no, I think this one's done. So let me move to safeguards 6, 7, and 8, pertaining to strings with restricted registration. On this one, Ron Andruff provided extensive text, and Stefan, I know you came in thinking you disagreed with Ron, but all you struck was the very first sentence, and therefore the rest of that looks like it held up. There are a few edits from Marilyn and Elisa and Sarah, but it looks as if all of the text on 6, 7, and 8, including an industry self-regulatory body, are going to hold up. Unless any other BC member has a question on 6, 7, and 8, I will quickly close with the discussion of closed exclusives. Any cue on 6, 7, and 8? Okay, fantastic. The last part of the GAC advice is that the GAC said to the board that any string representing a generic term with an exclusive registry access should serve a public interest goal. Back in March, as I noted in the draft, back in March, the BC took a look at the status quo then and the public comment on whether there should be brand new categories for closed generics. The BC said no, there shouldn't be categories. The BC took a straw poll on whether we should pick anything goes, apply the code of conduct, or dot brands only. There was not significant support for any of those, so the BC took no position in March. That means the BC has no position. It doesn't have a prior position on closed generics. We had commented on communities. We've commented on the need for the code of conduct, but we don't have a prior position. This is, I'm fulfilling my responsibility of articulating what could be the BC position. Emmett O'Keefe, Elisa, yourself, Sarah came in suggesting, for very different reasons, that we not make this point to ICANN, that the code of conduct already anticipates a lot of what the GAC wanted. And there are ways, Sarah, for instance, you objected to the notion of many closed generics. I would have thought that this process of doing those objections through a public comment on public interest would exactly satisfy your concerns. So I would first turn to you, Sarah, about why it would not be better to have a process under the code of conduct as opposed to being silent. And we'll take a cue. Sarah, would you like to start?
Yeah, I guess it would, the devil would be in the details, right? So if it, you know, we don't get into those specifics, but it would have to go beyond an exemption to register domain names, 100 domain names for yourself. You would have to show why, what steps you're taking to allow competitors, affiliates, partners, other consumers into that new TLD, similar to, I think, what Australia had proposed. But again, the devil's in the details, and I don't know, since we haven't taken a prior position.
So, Sarah, let me point out that we weren't even this one articulating what those details are. The ask of ICANN was twofold. We asked them to develop the process for how a registry would seek the exemption. So we're putting the onus on ICANN to come back like they should, and staff would suggest what that process is, including a public comment period and GAC participation. And we also said that they should develop criteria for registries that want it. So the devil of the details would all happen if ICANN took our requests at developing a process and criteria. That's where the details would live. So at this point...
Yeah, but I think that's a risky proposition. For those of us who have concerns, we do have criteria, and so you'd have to link the criteria together. You know, that would have to be opened in a way that takes away those concerns, and just saying to ICANN, come up with criteria and we're going to give people exemptions. When then we wait and hope that they do it the right way, but they may not.
But the criteria they would define, we have asked for that criteria also be posted for public comment and public input. Because I fail to understand how we benefit your position by simply being silent. I explain.
Well,
if we can
put a little meat on the bones, then that would be helpful. I'm not closed-minded about the idea of asking them to do something, but without any kind of meat, I think it's a dangerous position.
And is it more dangerous than saying nothing? In which case, I can't.
Why can't we say more? Why are we only given those two choices?
You're free to suggest another one, but we're running out of comment period time here. At this point, what I proposed was up for consideration. You would prefer saying nothing. Emmett O'Keefe from Amazon.
No, I wouldn't prefer to say nothing. I would prefer to actually say that we have concerns about some of the closed generics altogether, but in the interest of keeping with the BC's position, I think it would be more consistent to say nothing. If we do say something, then I think we should look at what Australia wrote in, and maybe build on that. It said, you know, that there should be, you know, an avoidance of unintended consequences, and then they urged specific transparent criteria for third-party access that should be appropriate for the type of risks associated with the TLD, should not set anti-competitive or discriminatory conditions relating to access by third parties. So that
Sarah, looks like a good language marker. And if you want to propose that language, you'd be editing the second-to-last paragraph of the section. You would be suggesting that it should be done through the Code of Conduct exemption and that you would be recommending that the BC have a couple of very specific criteria that make their way into the process.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, that's right.
I invite you to propose that as an edit as opposed to a strike-through to that section, if that section survives.
Okay. I'll
need
try.
Thank
if
you.
Others
John
agree.
Denver, if you're in the...
This is Jay Scott Evans. I just recall, Sarah, we've made comments that are along that line, I believe. I'll let Laura jump in here, too.
No, I was just going to echo us, too. So, yeah, we're with Sarah on this one.
We're with you, Sarah, 100%.
And by with Sarah, do you mean we want the Code of Conduct to have some meaty criteria in it, or that we want to be silent on this? What do you mean by that?
We want media criteria. We put in what we thought, and it's very along the lines of what Sarah just articulated. So, Sarah, I'm happy to look at the language you want to submit because we're in agreement. Our management is in agreement with that.
I would invite you guys to turn that around quickly. It would be on the second-to-last paragraph in the section on closed generics. It would be great to see some meat in there. We can put the bullets in and highlight it for the members to review. Thank you. Ron Andruff and then Emmett.
thank you, Steve, and thank you to Sarah and also Jay Scott for, you know, bringing that point across. I think I just want to support that it's a very risky proposition to ask the staff process on developing such a thing. We have taken this position earlier from the BC, and we cannot be silent. So I will also jump in to help edit that last paragraph or throw some comments in there. So I'll look forward to the lawyers taking their first kick at that cat, and then I'll add something if there's something to be added. Thank you.
Thank you. Emmett?
Yeah, this is Emmett. I'll just add myself to that list. But just where I'm coming from is I took the I thought the way you articulated the position earlier was, you know, an accurate representation of what the BC's position was. Not to say that there was no position, but that you know, in the open close comment period, you know, you submitted comments, and or BC submitted comments, and after the poll was taken, and essentially there wasn't consensus around any specific position. So, just number one, I took that as a position, and that, you know, if we want to, you know, add, you know, put meat on the bones, as I think the phrase was, to have meaty criteria in this. I mean, I'm open, very much open to having that discussion. Add me to that list, but. I mean, I think it's you know, and depending on what's suggested, it could be a significant change in position, and I think it warrants you know, a whole separate discussion, and that may, you know,
right.
could
and
easily
Emma,
happen
I mean,
in the next.
Because I'm the policy coordinator, I will take the view that if the BC on any topic has no position, that is not the same as taking a firm position, and I will suggest that leaves it open. To consider a position, especially when something dramatic has changed. In this case, two things changed. Number one, I can change the code of conduct. They took out the any purpose language, elevating the importance of the code of conduct exemption. Number two, the GAC has provided explicit advice pointing to the public interest, which is ironically the very same word that's used in the code of conduct. So those two changes would suggest that if I'm doing my job, I'm putting that in front of the BC with an opportunity to provide comment, and there is no prior position. If the prior position is that there was no prior position, I think we violently agree, and that opens the door to whether the BC wants to comment now. Anyone else in the queue? Great. I will look forward to Verizon and Yahoo adding a little meat to those bones, and then we'll try to get broader input from the rest of the members on this. And I think that's it for the comment on GAC advice, and I'll turn things back over to the chair.
Thanks, Steve. I did want to ask you about the registry agreement and whether or not you thought we might want to prepare comments on that as well. And if so, I'm happy to volunteer putting a draft together.
Brian?
Thank you, Elisa. As all of you know, the DC did comment on the last iteration of the registry agreement, and the current set of comments on the slightly tweaked registry agreement are due on the 11th of June. So, Elisa, if you'd like to take charge of that, we can start with what we wrote last time and really just focus on things that changed in the registry agreement. Is there anyone else who would like to volunteer to help Elisa to pull that together? I see a hand up from Ron Andrus.
Thank you, Steve. I'm not to volunteer.
Too late.
No, it was more just a question. I mean, Elisa, with all respect, you're our chair, but you're also a registrar. You work for in that space. So I would think we might have to recuse you from doing that unless I'm unclear. I just wanted to make sure we handle this appropriately.
Yeah, I mean, we're not a registry, and I'll just say I advocate for things all over the place that are honestly not in the best interest of my company. I thought it would be good for us to comment on that because it is another important document, and frankly, the other constituencies are commenting on it, so I thought it would be best for us to do that as well. But if others feel strongly that we don't want to comment on this, that's fine too. But I don't feel that I need to recuse myself because, frankly, I'm advocating on behalf of Mark Monitor's clients.
So I apologize. Okay. I sort of faded out. This is just Scott. What comments are we talking about? I apologize.
Comments on the registry agreement.
And Jay Scott did file comments last time that were largely ignored by those who were negotiating the new registry agreement.
Well, that would be me. So I apologize for that.
I can't ignore them, not you. Not you.
Yahoo filed comments, and I would encourage us to file comments.
I see Stefan.
Steve, this is Zahid. I would also encourage filing comments.
I've got it. Stefan, your hands up, and then Zahid.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Just to Ron's comment about Elisa's professional background. I actually think it's a good thing. Let me say two things. I think, first of all, if we're going to comment on topics such as these, it's always good to have people preparing the draft, and don't forget, that's what Elisa volunteered to do, is prepare the draft. The draft will be agreed by the BC as a whole, and probably through a process like we've just gone through with the GAC advice draft. So I think it's always good to have that experience. I don't think we should feel too sensitive about having that experience, especially when it's, you know, coming from people that might have understanding of the industry that are not registries themselves. So don't really see a problem there. I see it as a positive. I think we should take any goodwill that we can here, and anyone that's willing to start that work, we should certainly welcome them with open hands and open arms.
Thank you, Stefan. I would tend to agree with that. And Ron, we'll have every opportunity to analyze the substance of what our rapporteur comes back with. And that's an opportunity to say what the BCs ought to be saying. It sort of makes it sort of irrelevant who wrote it. Anyone else?
No, Steve, I appreciate it. I just wanted to make sure that we're clear on these things. There's no personal attack there, and I actually misunderstood the beginning. I actually heard registrar, so the whole thing was
okay.
So okay, apologies, and I appreciate Elisa picking up the pen for it. I know what that means. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Zahid. Zahid, are you there?
I think he was just supportive of us writing the comments.
Thank you, Elisa. Appreciate that volunteering. Back to you.
Yep. So why don't we move ahead? We have Chris, if he wanted to, not he wanted to, Chris volunteered to cover an update on the ICANN draft budget. Chris?
Okay, thanks, Elisa. I'll just run through this very, very quickly. The FY14 draft budget was published a few days early on the 10th of May. Comments for this close on the 31st of May and the reply round on the 21st of June ahead of a special board meeting to approve the budget on the 28th because, of course, FY14 starts on the 1st of July. This year has actually been very different from previous years, mainly because the new CEO has implemented a completely new project management system called ATASC. So the finance staff have been busy getting everything configured and importing data. So as a result, there's been no framework budget in February that we normally have. So the information in the budget that's just been, draft budget that's just been released, is actually new information. A couple of things that, some high-level points that might be of interest to the BC member, hoping. FY13, the current year, the revenue forecast now is $76 million, the general revenue forecast, slightly down on the budget estimate of $78 million, plus $174 for the new GTLDs. FY14, next year, the general revenue is going up to $88 million. And that's not because transaction volumes are estimated to be about 1% down, but this is due to, well, $2.5 million in the .com contract that's changed, 4 meetings for sponsorships, and new GTLD domain sales. That's not applicant money, that's sales of domains, $7 million. So that's sort of an additional $7 million that's not in previous years. Plus, of course, in FY14, GTLD applications at $98 million. On the expenses side, FY13, the current year, we had a budget of $74 million, and the expense forecast is $68 million. So we're down from 74 to 68, which is a similar pattern to what happened the year before. So really what we're seeing is a budget that's projecting an increase, and then I guess the activity isn't happening, so the actual expenditure is down on the budget. So the FY14 expenditure is up to $84 million. So just to recap those sort of headline numbers, FY13 budget was 74. The actual forecast is only going to be 68, but FY14 is predicting 84, which is the general expenditure, not the GTLD expenditure.
Chris, this is Jake Scott Everett. Is all of that change in revenue, it's actually just changing the pile it falls in when you talk about a pile as a year. Is that due because of they were counting on fees coming in from new GTLDs that they're not receiving within this year and are going to be receiving next year?
The application income from the GTLDs, if we mean that.
So that's talking about registration income.
FY14 is the first year that there's ever been any registration income, so FY13, it was never there.
Okay.
And
okay.
FY14 is $8 million,
right.
Yeah. So that's a new income, if you like, that we've got. Staff levels, because I think that's instructive. This time last year, I was reporting staff levels in the budget changing from 149 to 108 full-time. 189, from 149 to 189 full-time equivalents. The FY13 forecast for this year is an average of 179 staff, with reaching an end of year 233. The FY14 budget average is 259, with an end of year 284. So there's significant increases forecast in the budget. In fact, there's a graph that looks like Mount Everest as it climbs. But we do see, looking at the numbers, that ICANN aren't able to fill those staff numbers. So there's a lag from what's the budget forecast to what's there in reality. that's the end of my high level. Just to drop down right back down to the low level and the detail, there's a big change which is going to make it very difficult for us to comment, because where we used to talk about projects, now we've got this new system and projects, and you can go to myicann.org, and I recommend everybody does and have a sort of click around. Click on that projects tab, and you can see this sort of structure of projects, of objectives, goals, portfolios, and programs. And that's the drill down with ownership, and we've got these circles with green for on target and red if things are going not so well. There's 160 programs altogether, and it's very difficult to match the programs against the old projects. But these 160 programs do have four financial pieces of information against them: personnel, travel, professional services, and administration. So there is more information in there, but I think it's going to be more use to us next year to make comparisons. You know, and if I look at something like compliance, which was 6 million last year, this year it's broken down into 11 programs, and I can only total those up as 3.5 million. So, you know, I think really probably if we can do some comments, it's almost going to be questions. You know, we've got to go through 160 different programs, and if we know what those are, then that's fine and we can understand them. But if we don't know what they are, we ask the question, and our comment is going to be more about asking questions. So with that, I'll finish there and just see if there's any questions from members.
I see Andrew has his hand raised.
Chris, I have a couple of questions, if I might. One of them is that, does this reflect the opening of the new regional hubs and the, you know, supposed decentralization of ICANN, the organization? And if so, I would think it would be a lot more, frankly, because that's a major, that sounds like a major change to me. And the second thing is that one of the big raps against this whole the whole new GTLD program in the markets that we work on extensively has been about the lack of outreach and the lack of communication, you know, aside from a very, very, very superficial level. Were you able to see, is there more depth in that? Is there more focus on that? Because I think that is a risk for ICANN more broadly if it's perceived as not having addressed that issue.
Thanks, Andrew. To the first question is, yes, I'm sure it is, but I can't give you numbers. We'd have to hunt through the 160 and see what we can see, what we identify those elements that you're talking about. But in principle, yes, I think the Istanbul office, is that what we're talking about, the office or the regional vice presidents, they are in there. So drilling down under Sally, so It must be there. And again, with outreach, it's broken into a lot of different areas, because each different, you know, the different areas of outreach, there's probably about 10 or 15 different items. Again, we'd have to have a look. Let me take this online. Let me send you an email with that, and you can help us and have a look and answer your own question and give us feedback, I think. Thanks.
Sure. Happy to do so.
So I guess we can take one final question from Ron, because we're actually at time, and we do have another meeting scheduled for June 6th, so we can definitely pick up some of these other topics at that time. But go ahead, Ron.
Thank you, Lisa. I just I'm not sure if I heard correctly on compliance, Chris. I wondered if you might speak about that again. As we've all spoken for years within the BC about our concerns about compliance being underfunded and understaffed, I'm not sure if I heard the numbers clearly, but from what I got, it was $6 million, and now it's broken down into multiple projects. But then I thought you said $3 million in total. So I'm hoping that the numbers are reversed, that in fact they've doubled the amount of money for compliance. But could you clarify that? Thank you.
Yeah, what you said is correct. Last year, there was compliance with a 6.1 million against it, and then this year we've got 11 programs, meeting updates, monthly updates, other programs, complaint processing and monitoring activities, audit programming, contractual policy initiatives, new DSC program readiness, outreach, improved compliance programs, annual reports. And when I've totaled all those up, it comes to 3.5 million I think the numbers are wrong. I think it's the new system is still having teething troubles. What more can I say?
Well, that's certainly something that would be very helpful to get an answer to, because that would be something I think the BC would want to weigh in on. I would leave that to our XCOM to make that decision. But it just seems to me that that's an issue that we just keep asking, and they keep saying it's coming, and we never see it. And it's time that that number should be 30 million with all the new TLDs coming out. So it's pretty silly that number you've just spoken about. In my view. Thank you.
I just took that as an example to check, because I know it was of interest to the BC, so there could be others hidden there when we dig a bit deeper.
I think we should probably, it's worthwhile taking this to the list to see if we want to file comments on the budget and then to ask some of those tough questions.
Yep, okay, thanks.
That said, we are actually at time, and I want to thank everyone for joining today's call. And as I mentioned earlier, we do have our next call scheduled for June 6th, which is a Thursday, I believe. So we obviously can continue these discussions then. And I would encourage people to go to the list and continue any of these conversations there. So thank you, everyone, for joining today's call. And I'm sure we'll all be talking very soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. You're going to stop the recording.
Thank you.
Bye.